All right, are we ready for questions? Toby, did you have anything you wanted to mention before we go to questions? Or anybody have anything to say before we go to the Q&A part? All right, if you want me to come over with the microphone, if you have a question, raise your hand and I'll scamper over. Otherwise, do we have some written questions that we can pass on down? Questions? Yes, sir.
I can probably just speak. Okay, go ahead.
What happens to the jail and the current courthouse if a site other than that is chosen? Do we just have a vacant building, or is there some sort of contingency for those buildings?
I can start off on that one. Okay. So yeah, that's an excellent question. Get that a lot. I'd welcome any other commissioners that want to chime in because we had this question often.
We can't hear you.
Okay. I was afraid of that.
Okay. I can't hear you.
It's my voice will put you to sleep. Okay, sorry. The county offices would still stay there. So then that leaves. Then what do you have to? Then so you have the second floor that's based, and the American Legion is still on the third floor. And other than the state's attorney, the county offices would stay in place. That's the thought. So then what do you do with that extra space? Well, there are other agencies, and that's part of the process that we're going through. But other agencies, perhaps some of the nonprofits that the county and local government work with very very closely might be interested in some of that space. So. That's a great question, but to stop any rumors, we're not talking about tearing down the courthouse or anything like that. You're right. That would leave some space for those. You're talking about the options where you'd basically do a whole new center.
Yeah. So be it the auditorium idea, either one, two, or three. What about the jail though? What happens to the jail? Does that building just stay there? Or?
Well, that would be another decision, and that's something we haven't talked about too much. So the possibilities are, if the emergency operations department or the emergency management department and the state highway patrol, they need office space as well. But the idea is to get them in with the sheriff's office. That's a much better arrangement and close to the jail. So wherever that ends up. So then the debate is, okay, do we have a use for that building? And so that's something we obviously have to look at. And if we don't, then do we want to maintain that infrastructure? So then what do we want to just get rid of it or what? So that's going to be I'd say, in my opinion, and I'm just speaking as myself, I'm just one of five commissioners and one committee member, is that would primarily a financial decision. What makes the most sense? Given the age of that structure and how much would it cost to renovate for something else, if we had a use for it, how much would it cost just to keep it there?
But I think that is a very good point because, especially with the existing courthouse, there might be the opportunity to maybe keep some more space in there. I jotted a note down. I think we'll look at that a little bit more. Can we keep, can state's attorneys stay in there rather than moving to another space? I'd like to explore that a little bit because maybe it's the ability to utilize that building a little bit better. But I think it's a good point, and we should dig into that a little bit more.
Anybody else with questions? I've got one. Bruce, you mentioned in option 4A, the Midland building option would call for the demolition of the current jail and building a new jail. What happens to all the inmates currently in custody when you demolish a jail? Where are they held? And do you factor in the costs, I don't know where they're held, but of going and getting them and bringing them back for court appearances, that doesn't seem to be an easy task.
That's an excellent question. We did go through that a little bit last time. So, there are limited there are limited facilities in the region to house inmates, and you can't just suddenly take 80 inmates, 70 inmates, and say, okay, we're going to take them somewhere because of that potential operational. What we've looked at is the ability to phase construction. So we can build enough of the jail operations and the new housing unit and keep the jail in place, moving those inmates and that operations, demolishing the other section, and then building the remainder. So it has to be phased. We didn't get into that tonight, but there's some that involve multi-phase issues that are factored into the cost of construction. When you look at construction cost and phase construction costs, like the Midland building would actually require remodeling the Midland building, bringing up to whatever codes and remodeling it for government services, moving those folks over there. Then once they've moved out, remodeling that for courts, and it's a three-phase process to make that option, I think, 4A work. What happens is, instead of it being potentially an 18 to 20-month construction process, now it's potentially going to a 26-month construction process. So the big factor there is you're paying more to the construction company for that longer term of supervision. It's not necessarily a... It has a cost impact. It's not a large impact. It's some additional. So anyway, in all the options, we looked at the ability to phase construction. If you build it a new site, it's much easier, of course. Auditorium, highway shop, and 212, you build it, boom, you're done. Anything on the court site requires some level of phasing.
One point we did in the... So I'm the one who can't be heard. So okay, one point to add to what Bruce said. In the process of our discussions at the committee level, we had an option 4D that, for that very reason, it was just it was just way too expensive to you'd be housing inmates someplace else for a year, and now jail space is in short supply in this part of the state. We're not the only county going through this, and so we eliminated that option just because of the issue you brought up with your question.
And that's something that also goes into the evaluation matrix. That's one of the criteria that's used within that. So it's not just, you know, something that is separate from the rest of the analysis. It's actually going in and becoming a very real thing when we rate these sites. So,
anybody else with questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question about visitation and allowing counselors and so forth to come into the jail to visit inmates, to encourage them or whatever they're there to do. Of all the options, which ones are most friendly to that, and how do the options improve the current situation that we now have?
I'll take that one.
Okay. As far as the programming for the inmates, every one of the options would have the modern capability of having a religious space, having some type of multi-purpose area, a library for them to be able to read, you know, legal law books, things like that. Every option has to meet the minimum requirements of the ACA standards. And currently, right now, obviously, if you've gone through the jail, it doesn't have that. It does provide for the separation, the privacy, so you could have a multi-purpose room, you could have a programming room, you could have a small, what I would call, library, so you can separate and work with them, along with, in most new jails, you're going to have at least two or three areas where you can have private meetings for one-to-one direct family contact with an inmate, or with an attorney-client visit, clergy visit, anything like that. That has to be there. That's a requirement. And also, video visitation is another one that would be coming in. So if there are people who are traveling through technology now, you are able to visit a loved one in a correctional facility via a secure connection. So all of that is figured into every one of these programs. As kind of the person who looking at operation, that's a key component to most of that. As soon as you isolate anybody, you're only setting them back further. You need to get the interjection for AANA and all the religious sects to be able to get in there and be a part of working with them to help change the correctional mindset that they have.
And those types of spaces, the reason that the American Correctional Association kind of requires those is those are program spaces that allow for control and management and reward of the inmates. So if they're behaving themselves, if they're doing what they need to do, they're allowed to partake in some of these program spaces, which is about rehabilitation safety. And when you have facilities that don't have that, you tend to have a lot more unrest and a lot more problems with inmates. So by having appropriate program spaces, again, it's a control management, it's a safety for the staff. So again, complying with ACA standards helps to set the county facility up for safety of the staff and hopefully best rehabilitation and control of the inmates you're dealing with.
All right, anybody else with a question? Go ahead.
Are we currently housing inmates from other counties?
Correct, we do. We are.
Okay, and as a kind of percentage, about how many originate from Collingwood?
As a historical figure, approximately 9% have been from outside counties.
Okay, so about 90% is originate from Collingwood.
Correct. 90 to 91% are Cottington County inmates.
I mean, do you guys plan to expand, I mean, the contracts with the other counties, or is that kind of built into this whole idea?
Go ahead. Yeah, that's a great point. And we get the question a lot, like, what's the state going to be for other counties? And so we, so far, since between the last public presentation and this one, we've had an initial meeting with our neighboring counties. We put out the call, said, you guys know what we're up to, basically, but please come over. We'll explain it to you as much as we can. And so four neighboring counties sent representatives, either commissioners or from the sheriff's office. And so that's kind of the level of interest. They know they're going to be involved in this somehow. So now that we're getting closer to a cost estimate, the next thing is like, okay, they obviously want to know how much is this going to cost. And then we get into the mechanics of, okay, once we know that, do we work out some kind of a contract? Do we raise the bed rate? Or, you know, what do we do to cover that cost? And so that's the discussion. That's about where we are right now. The next step is essentially getting the jail cost identified close enough to where we can continue the conversation. You had a question about the makeup of the jail population, Cottington County versus other ones. If you want to, there's a 100-page report online. That's the one done by Mr. Garnos, but it goes through all of that. It takes it all apart. So, and it was the one with the cover with the jail bars on the video. So we have the three typically are that do use our jail regularly, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sheriff, because it's Clark, Hamlin, and Duell, but Grant also came too, and they don't typically they go between, they sometimes work with Roberts, they have their own small jail too, but I think that's indicative of the issues that all the jails are seeing, that we're seeing more inmates.
Anybody else with questions? Go ahead, sir.
Do all of the new jail facilities utilize the, I'm going to call it a wagon wheel effect, where the correctional officers are in the center and they can see every cell?
I think I've heard it referred to as podular.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Oh, that's excellent. You could be a jail consultant.
So what you heard on there, and Tom talked about in the video too, in the 70s, a linear design was basically this rectangular box, and you had no sight of inmates, and you had to physically get up and walk around to every situation to make sure that you could see what was going on for control. Now the idea is really that a correctional officer is sitting in a situation where they're pretty much able to turn around and see almost every position in those housing units. You're not seeing back into every cell, but you're able to see into the housing units. That allows the guard, the correctional officer, to respond to the situations. It lets the inmate know that they're being kind of watched a little bit more than they might be if they're kind of tucked away in areas. And so any good correctional facility that's being designed now is being designed based on this podular design. The other thing we've done, too, is design the plans that you saw are being designed in such a way to create small housing units. Because what happens is, if you heard about that peak factor for classification, if you have somebody that's just very unruly and has all kinds of problems and lots of issues, and maybe you don't know their priors yet, or there's a lot of problems, you might have a housing unit that has four cells in it. And so four cells equal eight beds. Well, because of that person's behavior, you can't really put them in with other people. So that peaking factor, you're putting that one person in where eight beds are. So we've designed it in such a way to create smaller podular layouts to maximize utilization of all the beds where possible. So it adds to that podular discussion.
Okay, then the follow-up to that, my original question, if each one of those had a room for expansion, and it was always kind of like off to the side or the end or whatever, but would that center area where the correction officers are, would they still have access physically or visibly to those areas also?
Exactly, and that yes. that kind of little white block we showed in plans yep. was the idea that you still have that linear control, that linear viewing of those areas, but you're expanding and still maintaining that visible control.
Anybody else questions?
My question, I guess, is in looking at some of the different plans and being at most of the meetings, I realize even like the ACA standard, the minimum standards for the ACA is still substantially higher than what surrounding states require of their jails. And I guess my question goes to not only that, but in one of the plans I looked at, there was a garage space there of about 15,000 square feet that took up a large amount of the footprint, especially if you're looking at going by the courthouse. To me, some of these things are pork. I think there's fat that can be trimmed, and my question is in looking at how it would affect the overall cost of these different options, how much leeway do you currently have as the architectural firm to look at these options and say, you know, we could trim some fat here, we could trim some pork here, we're still going to be covered. It may be ideally what we'd like, but it would make it much more cost effective. I guess that's my question.
And, you know, so when you're doing planning like this, thank you, when you're doing planning like this, you're at 50,000 foot. And your programming is based on actual requirements. So when we went through the programming exercise, what you're doing is you're taking, okay, we need 120 square foot office operationally. And I'll tell you right now, we went through the National Center State Courts programming information. We developed the jail program and went through sheriff's operations, and nothing in any of that is excessive. It's all what we see as far as national office standards, national operations space standards for those. So what we do is we go through and identify, okay, who are all the people that need space, a desk, a workstation, whatever. How big should those be? Then you add to that the corridors and the circulation. There's kind of a grossing factor for taking all those boxes. So if you have an office, of course you need the wall thicknesses and the corridor that goes next to it to create that floor plan of space that works. Then when you add everything else together, you pull all that together, operational space, employee space, and then you have another factor that allows for exterior walls, stair corridors, public bathrooms, another factor of space that you know is needed. We also analyze mechanical, electrical space, all those other support spaces. What I can tell you is the 29,000 for the National Center of State Courts for the courts, the roughly, let's see, forgot what the total jail area was off on my head. 34,000, which we did trim down. If you notice, one of the presentations at the last public meeting, we've actually come down a large amount of square footage from what the previous analysis was showing. So we have been able to make some efficiency in our square footage analysis. But at the end of the day, to summarize kind of where I'm heading, this 50,000 foot looks at square footage that's appropriate for the requirements for the operations and people in these facilities. When you get to actually putting pen to paper to create the actual floor plans, you look for efficiencies and you look to tighten things up. When you say trim the fat, trim the pork, if there's things that are budget high, you can talk about phasing. Maybe do we build that in the future, do we build this? But typically, I'll tell you right now from my historic experience, it's not like we're cutting an entire section out like we're finding there's 5,000 or 6,000 or 8,000 square feet. You can tighten things up. It's somewhat incrementally.
I've got a little bit to add to that, too. And to answer your question a little bit more intricately here, Bob, if you look at this option, I don't know if it's fuzzy. I don't know, Bruce, if you can point to where the garage section is here. That section right there, it's less than 5,000 square feet.
Yeah, 4,000.
And that would also incorporate the sally port for the detention center. So you'd have at least a two, if not a three-stall sally port within that. So that's divided up between jail operations and garage space,
and it's
less than 5,000 square feet.
What's a sally port?
Is your jail garage. So when a police department, sheriff's office,
any of our contract counties come in, they pull into a secure garage with their vehicles to offload and unload their prisoners. Sallyport, sorry about that.
And I'd just like to say, too, when we do our cost analysis, the cost analysis is based on the type of space, is it temperate, is it heated, and the technology required for the space. So when we get into doing the cost analysis and presenting that information, there's a much lower cost point for building up in the garage area than potentially because of the security and technology in the garage space. So there's different historic price points.
Right. I'm looking at the effect it has on the footprint, though. I mean, when you're limited in space, that, while that's a fairly inexpensive space to go and build, the garage portion, it still takes a significant amount of square footage when you got a limited amount to deal with.
Yeah. But the goal, I mean, you have to go back to the original goals, and the goal is to provide this 30 to 40-year justice facilities for the county that are going to last the long-term projection. So, you know, if you start to cut stuff out, are you really accommodating that long-term? But it's something to be discussed, I think, with the committee as things go forward.
Is there a provision for parking on this site right here? Like a parking lot?
There is a little bit of space. Maybe I should hold on to that for a moment. There is a little bit of space right back here. So this future area would be some space. Also, with not expanding on the courthouse to the east, that court, that parking over there would still remain as well.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I was told, and I don't know if this is correct, but the city auditorium is on the Registry of Historic Places. Is that correct? And will that affect any of this at all?
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think there's a discussion about that, but I can't say that for certain.
Okay.
But the courthouse is. I know the courthouse is. Yeah. I know the courthouse is. And I know the community. There's some folks in the community concerned about the, you know, it's a WPA building, you know, it's got, there's, yeah. So, yes, that's, so if.
But if you're just remodeling it, that wouldn't affect the historic place.
Yeah. And the way I, and
right.
I'm not the expert, but what we did bring in the Cottington County Historical Society early on in our process to say, to explain to us the significance of the courthouse and what, and that's where we got the idea that we should at least preserve the rotunda, whatever we do. So, and no matter what, preserve the north facade. That's where that idea came from. So the courthouse is on the National Register. What that means is, that usually affects if you take money from the National Register to say do an upgrade or a renovation or something, then that's where you're bound to do and don't do certain things. So that's essentially, and you know, I'm not the expert on it, but that's basically how I understand it.
That's exactly right. And the auditorium, I think the auditorium is a great example of Art Deco architecture. And so I think in our concept planning, even though again it's this 50,000 foot level, we try to preserve that as much as possible. And actually, even to some extent, get the new jail facility to start to not copy it, mimic it, but at least use materials that start to tie to it a little bit, or coloration of materials.
Any more questions from the audience? Go ahead, sir.
What was the cost estimate on that 1B?
We're still working through some of those cost estimates. They're still tentative, and I think we're working through the CC Jack group with those. So I, at this point in time, I kind of really
don't
technically want to get in. I mean, I'm not trying to hold anything back, but we're real preliminary numbers at this point.
There were numbers on each one of those, right?
But that was operational.
Operational expense.
That was just operational.
Right.
So we have, basically, to answer your question, in a general sense, I think it's fair to say that and I said this on the radio, and Dan covered it in the article from our last committee meeting, that the range of costs goes from, at least at the point of the analysis where we were at the end of the last committee meeting, so this was August 25th, it was from the 30 million-ish to all the way up to a little over like 36.
42 right now.
Yeah, so yeah, maybe close to 40. So just depending on which option you're looking at, 1B is not that high. But we don't want to take it to the bank just yet because we still got to do some more work. So,
all right. Any more questions from the audience?
Was the committee able to find any operational efficiencies as they reviewed how the courts, court services, the state's attorney, the sheriff's department, outlaying other organizations like counseling centers and so on, how they all work together. Were they able to identify any improvements to the way that the process works to make things more efficient, or wasn't that looked at?
It's, you know, if operations are co-located in one judicial facility, and again, I'm speaking really more from our firm's 30 years of experience of doing justice centers and my 35 years of doing this type of work, you create some efficiencies of staff movement and security and control when you have a justice center where all those are controlled together, like we were talking about in movement. We didn't specifically look at operational. There is some efficiency with the jail being next to the sheriff's office, the sheriff's operations, because there's some backup of staff and there's some control and management of staff that is efficient when they're connected versus apart. I don't know, Bob, if we've gotten into an analysis of the exact locations, because again, at this 50,000 foot level, in any of the options we're looking at, we're trying to make sure we create the maximum efficiency for each one.
Let me add to that. I might answer your question. I think I know where you're going. The job of this committee is to look at the facilities, and so like Bruce said, the idea is minimize the movement among the different entities that have to interact with inmates or the court or whatever. And so the structures and policies and procedures are going to change over the decades. So the basic principle of connecting the movement as much as you can and minimizing the amount of movement as much as you can, that's something that's going to be flexible over time. But there is another working group at the county level working with the city, police departments, Department of Corrections. It started off as a task force to work on what do we do about the mentally ill in our jail? And that's called, you might have read it in the paper a few times, it's called the Stepping Up Initiative. And so that's kind of a separate entity, but that's going to begin to touch on some of the other things. And there's other things going on at the state level as well. And this particularly deals with the interaction with how do the courts handle particular offenses? How do you handle pretrial detention and some of the sentencing guidelines in the Public Safety Improvement Act, otherwise known as SB 70 from 2013. So you have those things going on. Maybe over time we don't have to incarcerate quite as much, but there's other things going. It's good that we need to keep on working those things as a state, as a county, as a judicial system, and that might help us make these facilities last longer. The other thing, I lost my train of thought, but that was pretty important anyway. So did you want to follow that up?
I got something.
Yeah.
I think for people that aren't familiar with the jail, jail layout design and operational issues that we address, you saw in the video where they were walking the inmates across the parking lot in their jail outfits through the public. Number one, that is a true disrespect to the person who's incarcerated. Number two, it's a safety issue for both the staff and the person who's incarcerated. You're bringing them up through the hallway. So, to talk about functional efficiencies, one of the things we did, we said, okay, here's the amount of staff that Coddington County has. How can we build a facility using the existing staff? Because staff is the most expensive thing in building a jail. When you look at the long term, you saw the operational cost. You add one post, which is five people. That's very, very costly. So in balancing having facility on-site or off-site, having something together or not together, meaning the courts and the jail together versus separate, there are different factors that come in, whether there's a transportation issue, whether we're moving people from the courts out to the jail, back and forth. Those are the types of things, as we ferret it down closer, to be able to measure where there are efficiencies and where there's not. The biggest one is being able to utilize the staff that they've got for the facility that's there so it doesn't increase. Number two, making it safe to move prisoners, inmates back and forth, to and from the courts for their safety. And again, it may mean using some of the same staff from one area to the next, but that's where you sit down from a policy and procedure standpoint, working with the sheriff and the jail administrator to create a procedure that is safe for everybody and still makes it cost effective. we are not at that point, because that has to, that comes into play, that scenario comes into play when there is a more definitive area and a design being set out. Does that make sense for a lot of people that I know aren't familiar with what's happening in jails? And operationally, we're trying to reuse, reassess the same people that are there before you go out and just say we have to add staff. That's not a criteria of what we were hired for.
Can we just see, does anybody else have a question before?
I just had a follow-up there.
Okay, go ahead. All right, okay.
I guess the situation, and I'll just give you an example. My past experience at the hospital, what I've heard from officers and things like this are, at times I know it's really difficult for like the jail staff to deal with somebody who is heavily intoxicated or under the influence of drugs and so on. It either, they don't meet the criteria necessarily maybe to be in a hospital. I don't know if the hospital's made arrangements, but they weren't able to take care of before. Outside counseling agencies, I'm not sure, are set up to handle. In the jail situation, I think it's one of those situations where that individual has to be put into an isolation area of some time where you may be losing additional space and so on. And what I'm saying is when I say process, procedure, so on, as a part of this whole planning process, if some of these issues are looked at and incorporated, it may be that it puts less strain on the jail system, meets that individual's needs in a safe manner, and all these things. And that's why I was asking if the process is there. Are these things being looked at? Because in some cases, maybe we should be putting some of the resources in.
And the area you're talking about, Bob, like, and I'm sure Al's going to talk about, is the booking area. And making sure that, and we plan the booking area in such a way to have adequate cells, yes, where booking staff can observe people that might have problems in a way to control them until they can be properly handled, whether they have to go to a facility that can better handle them, whether it's a matter of them sobering up for a period of time before they can be released, or whatever the process is, but also designing the space to allow for sight and separation for juveniles and other use as well. So some of that initial space for control of those various individuals being taken off the street or being tried to control is accommodated not in the housing units, but really in the booking area, and you're hoping you don't have to really incarcerate them for a long period of time, that it's a short period of time to then handle them the way you might need to and appropriately.
To address that, we do have the safe room, and that is something that we did in the county.
Yeah, that's thank you, Brenda. That's an excellent example of showing how the county has worked with our resources within the community to try and lessen the impact on the detention center. That's one excellent partnership that we've got with Human Service Agency. It's been doing it for about 3 years now, where mental holds, you had no choice. They had to go to the detention center, somebody on a mental hold. A mental hold is not an arrest. It is not a, the person is not under arrest. It's a civil hold. And so thanks, Brenda. That's an excellent example of how the county's has reached out and worked with local partnerships to try and reduce the impact of those kinds of situations on those individuals, essentially keeping them from having to come into the detention facility, freeing up that bed that you just mentioned, and actually what I like to call just doing the right thing, because you're providing the appropriate level of care for that person without a stigma of jail.
So just in the 24/7 program you knew about, and so that's part of this, but also the discussion I referenced earlier with the Stepping Up initiative and the state initiatives to look at pretrial confinement, as well as what do you do about the mentally ill in the jail. And that gets back to some of what the sheriff said. You know, you have the various holds that, you know, really shouldn't be, the jail's not the best place. So that work is ongoing, but that's a kind of a parallel effort. And as insofar as we have success in that effort, that helps make our facilities last longer.
Plus, I'm pretty sure Al's going to touch on it. The whole podular jail design has changed drastically from our previous design. Like you were talking, we're using smaller pods inside the big pod so that you can use those smaller spaces for special instances like that.
In the booking intake area, if you've been into your current jail, you don't have a separation space for a true separation space for an adult female, an adult male, a juvenile female, or a juvenile male. Mentally ill, intoxicated, areas that you could put them in, sight and sound separated, so none of their rights are violated, and be able to be monitored. You talked about the mentally ill person being brought in because they can't get to another facility. If the resources had the ability to come in and work with them there, not necessarily in the housing unit, but in the intake area, where they can work with them and then get them to the appropriate place they need to be, a hospital or any other setting, you are lessening the degree of issues that they're having versus just putting them in the jail or in the main housing unit. The intake center that we are looking at, that is programmed, is multifunctional. It can do that. It can keep separate adults and juveniles. It has the ability to monitor them both physically, meaning looking at them, watching them, as well as having them on camera, recording them. Anybody coming in a crisis situation, and I know the sheriff and the jail administrator do this now, they're on an immediate 15-minute watch. It's, in some facilities they call it a security watch, others call it a suicide watch, but they have them there simply because they need to have that type of monitoring, that level of security and also comfort. Somebody in crisis needs to know that somebody's there that sees them you see them also. So, yes, in the short story long, in the programming, there are multiple uses in that intake area for, again, to get clergy in, to get mental crisis intervention people in, to work with people, be able to house and hold somebody who's intoxicated, as long as they aren't at the level to where they could, over a 0.20 or something like that, where they're going to require medical IVs and such, where they could hold them and then get them to the appropriate place. But yes.
Medical intake. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not going to go down the medical road. My point is, if somebody's over 0.20 and they have the issue where they could have alcohol poisoning, they're not a candidate to be in the jail. But many of the people that are there, if they can get them to a point where they can stabilize them and work with them accordingly, that's what they're looking for. The facility, the space that's there, is designed to be protective in many different ways. Sight, sound, visual, and recording.
All right, any more questions from the audience? Closing comments? How do you want to wrap it up?
Well, where is the microphone? I'll let anybody that wants to, anybody from the committee or that wants to say anything or up the front table. But I do want to remind folks that we're going to keep this stuff, we'll get it online. We have a lot of information online. We're trying to be intentional in the public awareness process and in the transparency. So, and by the way, we had somebody let us know that I had missed a spot where changing the date from the 15th to the 8th. This meeting was originally scheduled for the 15th, and I missed a spot on the website to update that. So sorry, but thanks for helping. But anyway, so the videos on either the Facebook page or the website, as well as all the reports. So, and you can contact me, the sheriff, other commissioners, and with your questions. And so it's about dialogue. And one of the cool things about South Dakota law is it involves the voters when we buy something this big. And but that means we have to have this dialogue. And so appreciate your coming.